You're listening to Trek FM.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt. I'm one of your co-hosts on this lovely show. With me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan Riddell. I'm pulling a Tristan on you, by the way. You do that to me all the time on the show. We introduce ourselves and then you repeat my name. Just like, hey, Charlene, check this out. So I'm doing it to you. Tristan Riddell.
I guess I didn't realize that I did that. I had no idea what you were talking about until just now.
Oh, yeah. So sorry. It is something that I've noticed and I like it. It's kind of endearing. It's a Tristan thing. Only you do that. And so I thought I would just turn the table since I'm leading this one and it's all on you. But Tristan Riddell, we have the best listeners in all the galaxy. Do we not?
I agree. I think we do.
Yeah, I don't think that's an exaggeration. And this is for a couple of reasons. Just at the top of the show, we want to acknowledge how cool you guys have been about not only telling us your favorite small moments in regard to last week's episode, dealing with things like Blue Alert, which we totally forgot in the podcast, and somebody mm-hmm. mentioned it to us, and I thought, oh, that's such a good one. But we got a lot of response on that, had a nice little dialogue going here and there. Good stuff, guys. It was really cool. Thank you for sharing that. But also, our little segment at the top of the show last week, we were talking about just the internet and the way it behaves and how it can be kind of tiring. And I wasn't really sure how that was going to be received, to be quite honest. I didn't know if we'd get a little bit of backlash or not. And we got nothing but 100% positive feedback on that thing. And so clearly we're not alone in feeling the way that we feel about the internet as it is right now.
We really aren't, because I was really wondering how that episode was going to go down, because so many people take so many things so personally that,
right.
You know, like they might think that it was an attack on them or an attack on the fans or anything like that, but it really wasn't. And it was funny because people were so positive about our negative reaction to negativity.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something we do very often either. We're all about positivity on TTJ because positivity breeds more positivity. We like that cycle and we keep it going as much as we possibly can. And we did get a little bit negative, you could say, in that segment. However, it still got the positive response.
And it's not like this is the first time that you guys have done this, but we want to thank you every single time you do it, whether you email us, write us, or leave us a voicemail. Tweet us, whatever you guys do. We thank you so much for your fan interaction, for letting us know that you listened and that you had enjoyed the show. And also just that, you know, like you said earlier, like what I think our friend Damien, like when he said, oh yeah, you got to talk about Blue Alert. How can you talk about the small things and not talk about Blue Alert? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So all those things, that was such a great response from last week's show. And we really wanted to reach out and just say, hey, that was awesome. Thank you so much. That made my whole week, every day, getting new responses on those two things. So thanks, you guys. You're awesome. And we already knew that, but you just prove over and over just how fantastic you are. We love our listeners. All right. But that is not the topic of the week. We are going to return to our ongoing series on Essential Trek. And so this week we are tackling Season 5.
Season 5. It's hard to believe that we've gone this far already with Essential Trek.
And I know.
Season 5 is such a good season.
It's really solid. And, you know, our ratio of episodes that we have kept overall with Voyager as a series so far is right around just under 60%, which I think is pretty good. But with Season 5, I wonder, are we going to push these numbers way higher? We could be.
I hope so. I think so, because, you know, it's really easy to bring your percentage down. It's not so easy to bring it back up. And it's one of the things that I hated in school. But it's with this one, I think we have a prime opportunity to bring this back up because, you know, both you and I agree that season 4 and 5 are some of the best seasons of Voyager.
Yeah, overall, I would say they are probably the strongest seasons. And so, tiny prediction for season 6 and 7, maybe that ratio is going to go down. So this is Voyager's, this is going to be the top percentage, I think. This is where it's going to reach its peak. Just a little prediction on my part. And I'm not a statistician, but if I know my Voyager, this is what's going to happen.
Or how about we just jump right into it?
Let's get into it. All right. Episode number 1 is Night.
Night. Voyager enters a vast region of space with no stars or systems. As the crew tries to find a way to pass time in this desolate part of space, Janeway bitterly reflects on her decision that stranded them in the Delta Quadrant. Now, here's the thing about like that description. That's not entirely true. They cannot see or detect any stars or systems because space is just that. It's space. You know,
that's why it's called space.
That's why it's called space. It's practically empty. So I think the producers did a good enough job to let you know that this is not like an even emptier space. It's they're somehow closed off because of like background radiation or something like that.
They teched some tech, right?
Science. Yeah.
Yeah. Enough to explain it away. But I think just they did a good job of illustrating the impact that this had on the crew. Just no stars to even look at, much less anything else. And they'd been doing this for, what, 3 months when we finally joined them in this episode? That's a long time to be looking at a whole lot of nothing. Not even any pretty stars out there. I love the fact that in Night, we have Janeway acknowledge some guilt about being in the Delta Quadrant. She's really gotten introspective and has a lot of regret about what has happened, how it's happened. And we've known for a long time that she feels singularly responsible for getting this crew home. But boy, do we really see how dark and deep it manifests in this episode. Now, that's not to say that you have to keep this episode for that very reason. I think it's a good case, though. However, I feel like the real sticking point for keeping Night is the Malon. Because we're going to see them again. So if you want continuity, you've got to have these pieces in place. And so this is piece number 1. We're going to have to keep it. What say you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Malon alone, it's the introduction of the Malon, and they're very important later on, and they have some really cool moments, and they're a very unique species, a type of species that we haven't really seen before. And I would have said yes alone to Janeway, you know, dealing with her depression. I would have said that's essential to the Janeway voyage, to the Janeway arc. And so on a story perspective, on a character arts perspective, I think this episode is a clincher. This is essential.
Yeah. Actually, I really like the point that you made about Janeway. It is essential to her arc, especially if you have read Mosaic, take a drink. Because you know that Janeway has a history of depression and dealing with hard times in a very reclusive way, which I think only makes it worse, but that's how she handles things, and it's not the most effective thing. And so that's an important thing to know about Catherine Janeway.
All right, number 2.
Number 2 is titled Drone.
A transporter accident involving the Doctor's mobile emitter and Seven's nanoprobes results in the creation of a 29th century Borg.
Now this is a toughie because it is beautifully written. It's executed exceptionally well, and it hits a lot of feels. It's very well done in terms of reaching out at your heartstrings and grabbing them and pulling them out and showing you the guts. But you know what? I don't think this is essential. It does not profoundly affect anything in the future, even for Seven.
I think I can argue for it.
My
main motivation is for the reasons that you said, where it's an amazing episode. This is a great episode. This is one of the best. This is one of my favorites. I think the actor who plays the drone, we've seen him a couple times before in Star Trek. He does a great job. He does a great job in this. And Jerry Ryan does a phenomenal job. Some of her best acting is in this episode.
I agree.
And, you know, like it talks about the mobile emitter. It talks about, it talks about the Borg, and it talks about Seven's journey. Now, previously in these other essential tracks that we've already done, we talked about how we need to limit the episodes that we agree upon for Seven's journey to individuality and becoming a part of the crew and everything like that. We need to severely limit it. I think this is one of those episodes that we need to say, okay, this is an essential part of Seven's journey because she is doing what Janeway did for her. In a way, you know, like it's not a carbon copy. It's not like the kids. I think it's much more interesting than what she did with the kids.
Because, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, absolutely. And because with this one, it's not just an adopted child. It is pretty much her child, like in a sense. And so she talks about what it is to be an individual with another person. So it's not just Janeway trying to convince Seven that she's an individual. It's Seven convincing somebody else. And because it's so well written and because it's one of the few, how do I phrase this? There's so many Borg episodes out there that I think there's going to be some of them that we, you know, leave on the cutting room floor. I don't think this should be one of them. So I think to expose people to a good Borg-centric episode and expose them to a great Seven episode and a good well-written episode, I think that's essential.
Okay. The one thing that clinches it for me in terms of keeping it is that this does show that the baton has been passed a little bit. Janeway has been mentoring Seven. Now Seven is mentoring this former drone. It is showing that Seven is taking some ownership in controlling her destiny, and kind of like it's a progress report in a way of where she is.
Seven is now advanced enough, now mature enough, that she can start taking care of other people and start doing this on her own, and she doesn't need Janeway to look over her shoulder.
Right, and about a season ago, she was learning how to chew again. So that's progress.
yeah, I think so too.
So, all right, you convinced me. Let's keep this one. It is, if you're going to keep a Borg episode, this is a really good one to keep, So be it. Next up, Extreme Risk.
The crew races to build a new shuttle designed by Tom Paris in order to retrieve a multispatial probe trapped inside a gas giant. Meanwhile, B'Elanna Torres' attitudes worries the crew. This is a no-brainer.
Yes, and it's not just because you're biased toward B'Elanna. It's absolutely necessary because, hello, Delta Flyer, it's sort of important for, the rest of the series.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, even if you don't even factor in B'Elanna's monumental story arc and character arc in this episode, it has the Delta Flyer. We're going to see that a whole bunch more, and we're even going to see it destroyed. So if you have no idea how it was created, you're going to go, what the hell? What is this doing here? What did they get that?
Exactly. Yeah, so I don't even think we need to delve into the details here. This one's a keeper. So next episode is In the Flesh.
In the Flesh, Voyager finds a station containing a disturbingly accurate recreation of Starfleet Command and Starfleet Academy by Species 8472.
Okay, this is another one where I'm a little bit torn. I think it's important because we find out what Species 8472 has been up to since we last saw them. And what they're up to is they're trying to protect themselves against humans and or the Federation. However, we don't ever really see Species 8472 doing this in the future, and so you could argue you don't even need this episode because it has no impact on future continuity, and yet it is kind of an interesting romp, and since Species 8472 is so unique to the Delta Quadrant, I feel like, I don't know, that would be ripping out a pretty important piece of the Voyager story if you take it away. What do you think?
I feel like reason alone to keep it is this is the end of the Species 8472 story.
That's a fair point, yes.
You know, like this, we see them make peace with a monumentally scary species in the Delta Quadrant. So when we saw them introduced as, you know, as contemporaries to the Borg and just as dangerous, if not more so, and then they side with the Borg and piss off Species 8472. This is something that Janeway gets blamed a lot for in the Delta Quadrant, where she sticks her nose in where it doesn't belong. She ignores the Prime Directive, and she leaves footprints all over the Delta Quadrant when she shouldn't. And so this, I feel, is kind of a button to the story where it shows Janeway making it right, where they discover this. It's weird, it's crazy, and instead of trying to destroy the facility, or instead of trying to eliminate the threat, they do it in a peaceful way, where they say, hey, we're not really the bad guys. And Species 8472 goes, oh, well, we aren't either. So maybe we shouldn't be enemies anymore. That's important. That's what Star Trek is about.
That's a really good point. There's no reason to tear that argument down. That's a keeper. Okay, all right. So we're going to keep that. We've kept the first four so far. Now we go to Once Upon a Time.
Neelix tries to take care of a young Naomi Wildman whose mother was aboard the Delta Flyer when it crashed into a planet during an ion storm.
Okay, well, this is the first time that we see the Scarlett Palmer's version of Naomi Wildman. You could say that's important. This, I think, is the start of her friendship with Seven of Nine. But since there's so much more of that coming up, I don't know how important this is. I mean, the only other thing you really need to absorb from this episode, I think, is the Flotter doll. And you can do that on your own time.
Yeah. It's I like this episode. Not a lot of people do.
Yeah.
I like that it's a Neelix episode. I like Neelix in this episode. But as far as it goes, it's not essential to Voyager's travels. It's not essential to Neelix. It's not essential to Naomi, I don't think.
No, just because she is going to be around so much more. And I suppose the one last thing that I would maybe argue in favor of this episode is, from this point forward, we don't necessarily see Naomi with her mother for whatever godly reason, whatever Samantha's up to. And so you have the mother-daughter bond for the first time in a long time and also the last. Now, again, I don't know how essential it really is because Samantha does not actually die. She gets injured and her life is threatened. And it's interesting to see it play out. I mean, it is a great story, but you know, if you skip it, are you really missing anything? And I think the answer is no.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think this is going to be our first skip of the season.
All right. Well, sorry, Naomi and Sam, you're gone. So the next one up is Timeless.
A failed attempt to return home results in Voyager crash landing on an ice world, and also in the deaths of the crew, except Chakotay and Harry Kim. Now, 15 years later, the two men, having resigned from Starfleet, attempt to alter history to save the ship from disaster before Starfleet can stop them. I feel like you could argue that this is not essential because of the epic reset button at the end. I mean,
time travel.
It's all about time travel. It's all about resetting history. Now that's the point of the episode, so we should give them some slack because it's the point of the episode, and they know that going into it, and they announce it right at the beginning. And so, by the rules that we've set down, this is not essential Trek in the realm of story, but I do think it's essential Trek in the realm of fan experience.
Agreed. Okay. That sums it up right there for me. There's so many things going on here. First off, it's the 100th episode of Voyager. And so that alone is a celebration of the show. And I think the list would be incomplete without it. But it's also a great episode. You get the best performance from Garrett Wong I think you get in the whole series. You get a cameo by the director, LeVar Burton. And yeah, it's directed by LeVar Burton. Hey! But then two more words. Slipstream drive. This is where it's essential. Yeah. It's the innovation that Warp 10 should have been, right? And like just about anything related to Voyager getting home is essential to the show because, I mean, that's what the show is all about. You could, I mean, without that, I think you're really missing something very important here, not to mention just the fact that it's a really great episode. Who cares about the reset button on this one?
I think that you bring up a really good point with Slipstream because we have used that excuse before about how this is them trying to get home. This is them creating new technology, discovering new technology, and using it to get home faster. Yeah. And that is the purpose of the show. So I think that, even if you disregard my fan experience comment, you bring up an even more solid point of this enhances your view of them trying to get home.
Yeah, and let's be honest, it's been a little while since we've seen any developments on this front. There haven't been any wormholes or anything like that in a good couple of seasons, so it's kind of nice to see that, hey, they have been working on something, and it's pretty complex, and it's very risky, but they're going to try anyway because it's Voyager, and it does shed a little bit of time off of their journey, and it's not completely worthless.
Absolutely. All right, keeping it.
All right, next episode is Infinite Regress.
The discovery of a compromised Borg vinculum causes Seven to develop multiple personality disorder. Now, you and I have talked about this episode a little bit.
We did, in the mess hall.
There are good things about this episode. There are very good things about this episode. But overall, it's just kind of meh.
It's, yeah. Jerry Ryan's performance in it is absolutely fantastic. And it's not like it is a bad episode, but again, is it necessary? Does Seven have a long-lasting kind of impact as a result of her experience in this episode? I say no.
I say no as well.
The one thing that we should consider, is it worth keeping, is the ongoing friendship that's going on between Seven and Naomi. That's it.
That's still not enough for me.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not. Compared to all the rest of it, it's not. So it's got to go.
What's really, really funny, as we're going through the episodes, I'm reading the synopsis off of Memory Alpha, and I scroll down on the page, and there is a picture of Seven of Nine behind Torres, trying to bite her, and it's kind of a blurry photo because it's an action photo, and the subtitle below it says, Seven of Nine tries to mate with Torres. And it's the most disturbing image with this most disturbing subtitle. Yeah.
Wow.
It's hysterical. Everyone needs to go to the Infinite Regress Memory Alpha page and look at this.
Oh my gosh. I wonder if we should use that for show art this week. Never mind the fact that it's so blurry.
Maybe.
But oh my gosh, it is such a strange photo. Okay, for one thing, you get the screen cap of that, right? But then you keep it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
All right. I'm trying not to judge here. Okay. So we're going to chuck Infinite Regress. Fair enough. Next up is Nothing Human.
When an injured non-humanoid alien attaches itself to Lieutenant Torres, a hologram of a notorious Cardassian exobiologist is created to help the doctor remove it from her. This is a toughie.
It is a little bit. It has some points in its favor, and it's got some points against. I think the story is fantastic. It is a great classic Star Trek conundrum that's going to make you think. And so it's got that going for it.
This is a story that can only be told through Star Trek, and that's what I really appreciate about it.
Yes. And so for that reason, I do want to keep it. However, on the downside, we have the very pathetic CGI alien that's laughable, which really takes down the credibility in the story. I mean, it really pulls me out of it. I'm sorry. It just does. It's really goofy looking. And that's not enough to say that, oh, we should dump it because it looks bad. But I'm just wondering, this is kind of a one-off episode. Again, long-lasting impact. What's there? I don't see anything.
I think I might want to use my optional chip on this one.
Do you?
Because I really like this episode. I think it has a moral message, which is what Star Trek's all about. Yes. I think it has a great story. I think it's well written. I think we get great performances out of the Doc and B'Elanna. And yeah, the alien kind of sucks, but the premise is great about the alien. And Mosette is, I think, a well thought out character and very, very evil without twirling his mustache.
Very Cardassian indeed. That's true.
Yeah, very, very Cardassian. So I think this one should be one of our, unless something better comes along, I think this one should be our optional, because I don't think I'll be able to win you over to actually put it on the list.
No, I'm not sure if you will. So we'll put it on standby and see what happens, because we've still got quite a bit to go here. Next up is 30 days.
Tom Paris is demoted to ensign and is sentenced to 30 days in the brig for disobeying orders. That synopsis alone is enough to say, oh yeah, you kind of need that one.
Exactly, right? If you really want to know what makes Tom Paris tick, you absolutely have to watch this episode.
And the dude was demoted.
He was demoted.
He was demoted. We've never seen that before.
No. No, and we get a very dramatic removing of the pips, and that's how the episode starts. What about this is not essential?
Yeah, it's essential to the story arc of what, like, basically what's just going on in the show, because, yes, you know, he's demoted. And so in the future episodes, you'd be like, why is everyone calling him Ensign Paris? You know, what's going on?
Yeah.
And also, this is essential to the arc of Tom Paris. Even though the whole love of the sea and ship thing came out of nowhere, came out of left field with the character. That was the only thing that really bugged me. Once you establish that premise, you're like, okay, whatever. I'll buy into the premise, and then you move on. Yeah. It's essential to Tom's growth from season one.
It really is. It's absolutely essential. I don't think we need to make any more of a case for it. So that leads to episode 10 of the fifth season, and that is Counterpoint.
Voyager smuggles telepathic refugees through D'Vor space. We talk about this episode so much that I kind of feel like this is essential to TTJ viewing.
Are we going to have to do essential TTJ after we do essential Voyager? We might.
We might have to. I mean, we reference this so much. We have a drop for whenever we say Prax.
Prax!
That's a great idea. Yes, Prax!
Prax!
Yeah, all that aside, like TTJ aside, this one...
I know, this is difficult, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's essential to the overall plot of the show, but it's such a good Janeway episode.
Yes, and Kate Mulgrew has said how many times at conventions that this is one of her absolute favorites of the whole series, and you can see it in her performance. She's just gnawing all over this. She loves it. And this is it's a real gem of an episode. Even among season five that's fairly consistent, this one stands out as really exceptionally good because Janeway has a very formidable villain in Kashyyyk to play against. And boy, it's a lot of fun to watch it play out. Is it essential? You know, we don't see the D'Vor again. You don't see Kashyyyk again. It doesn't have an overall lasting impact on Voyager or its journey. I think this one's going to be my optional.
I think I might be able to. This is going to be a stretch.
Okay.
But I think I might be able to put it onto the solid list where Janeway, like several times we've had the conversation with Janeway about how she's not allowed to date anybody on the crew. You know, yes. She's not allowed to date Chakotay, even though she has burning loins for him.
But when they're secretly married anyway.
That's right. Regardless of that eternal truth,
right?
You know, we haven't seen it yet, but we see a conversation later with the doc talking about how, you know, like you can't have a relationship with the crew because they're your subordinates. So what does that leave? Just a dalliance here and there with an alien? Why not? You know, have sex with a hologram? And so with this one, I feel like she has so few dalliances with aliens. Uh-huh. Maybe we need to show this one because I am hardcore going to remove the other dalliance that she has with an alien in Workforce.
Really? You're giving spoilers?
I'm giving spoilers for future Essential Trek. With extreme prejudice, I am removing Workforce Part 1 and 2 from from Essential Trek. And so any kind of romantic dalliance, I think it needs to be in Counterpoint.
Well, okay. I mean, this is definitely the better of those romances. And, I mean, she didn't sleep with Kashyyyk, that we know of. It was just a really passionate kiss. And we don't even know for sure how much of it was her acting and how much of it was real. Probably some combination of the two, because the episode keeps you guessing constantly. And I guess I'm going to go with my own little biased opinion here, which, you know, we've really been pretty good about not doing this so far in this series, but I like this episode, so I want to keep it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it boils down to. Even though I love Nothing Human, it wasn't enough to put it down. But with Counterpoint, you have to watch this one. You have to.
It's that exceptional. I really do.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
If you don't like it, deal with it. You can write the show. Trek.fm/contact. I'll reply personally. All right. Let's move on to Latent Image.
When the Doctor discovers evidence that his memory files may have been tampered with, it sets in motion a chain of events that led to the recollection of the death of a crew member. one the doctor believes he was responsible for. Important things happen to the doc in this episode.
Yes.
But they don't come up again, do they?
No. I really tried to jog my memory on this to see if it did come up, and I really don't think it does. And therefore, I don't know if this really great existential crisis he's having is necessary viewing.
I think it's interesting to watch, but it's just an okay episode. Now,
right.
we've put on essential okay episodes before, many times before, but if this doesn't have any reference to things we've seen prior or things that we're going to see, and it's just an okay episode, I think we can leave it where it is, and that is non-essential.
Yeah, we see the doctor develop so much that I don't feel like this is any particular, I don't know if this is enough of a turning point for him. You could say that he does develop more of a conscience in this episode, a more human-like conscience, because he has regret about what happened. But I don't know. At the same time, I feel like that's sort of just happening by osmosis as he's going anyway. You kind of get that in a more subtle way through the series as a whole. We don't necessarily need to demonstrate it. So I think we should strike it.
Yeah, I think so too. And but we do see him establish that he is friends with Harry Kim, where he chose Harry Kim over the other woman because he was friends with him.
Right. I suppose there's that much. Harry has a friend.
Aww. All right.
Okay, next up, Bride of Chaotica.
Yes, essential. Let's move on.
Oh, come on. No. We got to do a little better than that.
We got to do better than that. Okay. Transdimensional photonic life forms on an exploratory mission become entangled in a war with the characters from Tom Paris's Captain Proton program after mistaking Voyager's holodeck for reality.
There are actually reasons why you could say this is not essential at all, because it is not crucial to Voyager getting home. It is not because it has lasting consequences, but I think you keep it because Voyager is at its best when the cast and the crew are having fun. And this is such a refreshing breath of air. This is one where you've got to watch it at least once. It's got so many fantastic one-liners in it. Everybody gets a little something to do, which is nice. And it's a fun romp. And I don't think you're going to get a full Voyager picture if you skip this one. Also, continuity, just a little bit. They did start out this program in Night, which we kept. And now we really get to see it fleshed out.
And we'll see it again later on.
Right. So, yes, I think it is essential. It might be a thin line saying continuity makes us keep it, but there's so many other better reasons.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a thin line of continuity, but it is there. But the thing is, though, is that if we've used the excuse for timeless, if we've used the excuse for fan experience for timeless, we 100% have to with Bride of Chaotica.
Absolutely.
Everybody talks about this episode. Everybody loves this episode. It's in our freaking intro of To the Journey.
Right.
You need to see this episode because of all the reasons that you stated and because it's awesome.
Right. Okay, moving on. Gravity.
Tom Paris, Tuvok, and the Doctor shuttle crashes on a deserted planet within a temporally distorted area of space, stranding the two with an alien woman who falls in love with Tuvok.
I vote no.
I know. I knew you were going to.
I'm sorry. I know you like this episode. You like it better than I do, and I've tried to be really objective about it, and I still come up no. I think it's a good It's a good episode for Tuvok. He has a meaningful relationship with Nos.
But I got an excuse. I have a reason why.
teacher, call on me. Okay, go ahead.
This is where we get Tuvok's backstory. This is where we see him learn logic. This is where we see him as a furious young man, a very non-Vulcan young man.
Oh, shoot.
I say this is essential to Tuvok's character arc.
Damn it. It is. We've got to keep it because aside from flashback, we don't get a whole lot of Tuvok backstory, and we don't get it anywhere else in this era, in this part of his life.
Nope.
All right, I win. Fine. You win.
Sweet, whatever. I get to keep Lori Petty. All right,
moving there on. You go. Are you happy?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that leads to Bliss.
Voyager finds a wormhole that leads directly back to Earth. Convenient. But Seven of Nine suspects that it may not be what it appears. This is a good sci-fi story. I love the entire concept of the pitcher plant thing. Mm-hmm. And is it essential? No. Is it a fantastic episode? Not really. But this is them thinking that they're going to get home and they're not.
Yeah. I'm going to pull that. Oh, I got one on this episode. Because even though it is a fairly mediocre episode overall, it's not overly entertaining or anything like that. It does, however, fall into the essential criteria under Voyager getting home. Or at least thinking that they are. Now, never mind, of course, that it's a fake. But we see a lot of things play out here.
Yeah.
So I think we ought to keep it. What do you think?
I regrettably agree. I don't think it's that strong of an episode to keep, but I think we need to.
Agreed. Okay. So next up is Dark Frontier.
When Captain Janeway devises a plan to steal a transwarp coil from a damaged Borg sphere, the mysterious Borg Queen learns of the plan and uses this knowledge in an attempt to return Seven of Nine to the Borg by issuing her an ultimatum. Rejoin the Collective. Or watch as Voyager is assimilated. I like the intro of this episode. I think it's really cool because we get a mini heist at the beginning. And we get sassy Janeway right off the bat.
Yes, we do.
You know, Borg chimes in and says, resistance is futile. And she goes, is it? It was like she just like jumps in and she says it. I can't do it like Kate Mulgrew can, but she says it so sassy. She's like, is it? I don't think so. Like, F you, Borg.
Yeah, I mean, that takes some serious cojones, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, but only Janeway would say that to the Borg. And, I mean, that alone, I think, is reason enough to keep it. Because sassy Janeway really is at her finest in Season 5. I think Bride of Chaotica really got her going, as well as Counterpoint. And I'm talking Janeway as well as Kate Mulgrew. They're both at the top of their game here. But I think this is a Borg story we really ought to keep. Because we got a few things here. We've got the Borg Queen for the first time since First Contact. That's a pivotal thing. And this is pivotal for Seven of Nine. She has the opportunity to rejoin the Collective. And instead, she chooses to remain aboard Voyager, at least in part thanks to Janeway's persistence with her. But also, we have a lot of Annika Hansen backstory. Now, if you think back to our Season 4 Essential Voyager, we decided to chuck the Raven because... all of that backstory that they portrayed there is done even better here and in greater detail. So we really need to keep this one.
Yeah, I think for the backstory alone, I mean, this is a great episode and it's a two-parter. Well, I mean, not a two-parter, you know what I mean. Like it's a double episode.
Well, it is, but it isn't. I think, didn't they air it all in one solid block initially?
Yeah,
but
yes.
They consider it 2 1-hour episodes.
I think in syndication, they split it up, but they aired it as a feature-length episode originally.
That's correct.
I think just it's a great episode. Jerry Ryan does a great job, you know, per usual. But yeah, this is critical Annika Hansen material. Like, the best Annika Hansen backstory that we're ever going to get.
Word.
So there you
okay.
go.
Okay, so yeah, drop the mic. I want to drop the mic on this episode coming right up, and that is The Disease.
Harry Kim breaks Starfleet regulations when he falls in love with an alien woman.
Oh, adolescent Harry. Adolescent Harry manages to get the space herpes.
The spa herpes.
Now, I think that's essential TTJ.
This episode is more essential TTJ than it is Star Trek Voyager. But here's the thing. You know, we used that flimsy excuse with Janeway to get Counterpoint on the board. I feel like we kind of have to with Harry Kim.
You think so? Do you really think this is essential to Harry? I feel like it has the potential to be essential to him, but I don't really think it is.
I think the conversations that he has with Janeway shows how different he's become over the past couple of years.
In what way?
He is brazen with Janeway, and he is... insubordinate. He's literally insubordinate at times, and he pisses her off. That green ensign who was on the bridge and scared of saying the wrong thing, you know, in season one, he is nowhere to be seen in this episode.
That is true.
Whether that's character growth or the affliction of the disease or a combination of both, I think this is essential to Harry Kim's journey.
The thing is, though, is what does Harry learn from all of this? What does he take away? How does he take this into the future? That is where I'm uncertain if it's essential or not. Because does it really change his character from here on out? It changes him in this episode. You could just chalk that up to bad writing. But in the future, I mean, is this balancing him out as a person for him to maybe stand up for himself a little more? Because I think that's in part what you're getting at. Because, yeah, that Green Ensign is nowhere to be seen in this episode. Is he really maturing despite his overall lack of growth in the series as a whole?
I think so. And also, if you look at it from a romantic perspective, this solidifies him moving on from Libby.
Yeah, that is very true. That's a good point.
Now, granted, you've had like flirtations in the past and, you know, maybe he's tried to get with the Delaney sisters or taken them out on a date or something like that.
Yeah.
But that could be construed as just casual. This is not casual.
No, not by any means. So, all right, in terms of character growth, this one squeaks by. I don't like it, but...
Under protest!
Yeah, under protest, we add this to the essential viewing. And I know that's actually got probably the fury of all of our listeners right now. Like, what? You're doing what?
I don't think it's
well, if you don't like it, host your own podcast. Okay. Next up is Course Oblivion.
Course Oblivion! As Voyager crew members begin dying, they make a startling discovery about their true identities. Now, this is part two of the Silver Blood arc.
That is right, because we kept Demon in season four, and this is part two. We find out what happened with all of this, and you have to keep it for that reason alone.
You have to keep it. This is the end of that storyline. We find out what happened to them. Now, does it affect the Voyager crew on a whole? No, not at all, but that's not the point. This is a conclusion to a story that we started seasons ago.
Right, yeah, this is continuity heavily at work. Also, I like the fact that it's not necessarily a happy ending.
Right, yeah.
Which doesn't happen very often.
They don't win. They don't get home. They don't even signify the other Voyager of their existence. They don't win in any way, shape, or form. That very rarely happens on TV.
And it's heartbreaking, and I don't know. I just like it. I like that it happened here and not anywhere else. You know what I mean? Like, if we would have had that every week, that would have been a real downer. But here... boy, is it interesting. All right. Absolutely. So we'll keep Course Oblivion, and next up is The Fight.
When Voyager is caught in chaotic space, an area where the laws of physics are in a state of flux, Chakotay begins hearing and seeing things, apparently caused by the aliens living inside it who are trying to contact the ship. This is a hardcore, non-essential Trek episode.
Well, one thing in its favor is that we do learn some things about Chakotay, but are we just as good without him as we are with them?
What do we learn? That his grandfather was crazy and that he likes boxing?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not enough for me.
Also, it's this sudden, profound, newfound love for boxing, which apparently has been happening this whole time, but we're just learning about it now, 5 years in, really?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's what really gets me with that whole thing. If maybe we had a little more to work with here, I would say, yeah, let's keep it. But it's not a good episode. And no, I don't know if there is enough Chakotay information to really make this essential to his character, because I think this is basically the first and last time we do the boxing thing. But then there's better stuff in terms of learning about his family. And so his grandpa had the crazy gene. Well, that never comes up again before or after this either. So... you can erase it, and you're just as good without it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Getting rid of it. Next episode.
Yeah. Think tank.
A group of extremely intelligent aliens offers to help Voyager escape from a race of bounty hunters known as the Hazari in exchange for Seven of Nine. Now, I like this episode. I don't think it's a great episode, but I like it. I enjoy watching it. I like seeing Jason Alexander in it because he's a huge Star Trek fan. But I don't think it's essential. I don't think it's essential at all.
No, it is a very good episode, and I like it too. And the one detail that might be kind of fun as a footnote that you get from this episode is that the Vidians are now free of the Phage. I feel like that's one really good takeaway, but that's not enough to keep a whole episode, despite how good it is. It's not something you have to see. So that leads to the next episode, which is Juggernaut.
Voyager finds a damaged Melon freighter, which is about to explode and contaminate an entire sector with deadly radiation. Now, this one, I feel like it could go either way, because this is a continuation of the Melon storyline, which we kept earlier, you know, with Knight.
Uh-huh.
With this one, this directly affects their journey home, because if that Melon freighter does explode and contaminate an entire sector, warp drive would be impossible for that sector. And it would take them that much longer to get home.
Okay. So then you have two things working in its favor to keep it, because you have continuity with the Melon one more time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, again, not necessarily one more time. But then also you are putting them in danger of possibly not getting home, or certainly having some long delays in their journey home, which is already long enough. Thank you very much.
And we get a dirty B'Elanna Torres in a tank top.
Well, there you go. I know that's satisfying for you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Essential.
I consider it essential too. Yeah. I think for continuity alone, it's good to see the Melon again. And yeah. Okay. Someone to watch over me.
The Doctor teaches Seven about dating and romantic relationships, but then realizes that he may have developed feelings for himself.
I think it's essential. This is essential to Seven of Nine's development. She's taking dating 101, and this is completely new to her. And then also you got that whole unrequited love thing, which, I mean, that definitely boosts the rank in terms of enjoyability and emotion in this episode. It's very good.
I, for one, think that this is more about the Doctor's growth than even Seven's.
That's a really good point to make, because, yeah, I feel, if nothing else, it's just as important to him as it is to her. Yeah.
Yeah, I do believe that. So, yeah, I think, yeah, we absolutely have to keep it.
Cool. All right, moving on. 1159.
Catherine Janeway discovers the truth about one of her famed ancestors, Shannon O'Donnell, realizing that who Shannon was differs vastly from what Janeway had believed all her life. Now, you're not going to like me for this.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. It's fine.
I don't think it's essential at all. Is it a great episode? Yes. But is it essential even to the fan experience? I don't think so.
No, it's not. We don't hear about Shannon O'Donnell after this episode. We didn't hear about her before. And really, I mean, it's not even like Janeway talks much about her ever again. As much as I love it, there's no reason to keep it, which makes me sad. But that's, you know, this is harsh. So that leads to Relativity.
Seven of Nine is recruited by a starship from the 29th century to save Voyager from being destroyed in the past. Now, this, just like Course Oblivion was the end of the Silver Blood arc, this is the end of the Future's End arc.
Correct. Yep, that's enough continuity for me right there. Captain Braxton.
Braxton. We see Captain Braxton again, and we see the end of his story.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't hurt that this is also a really fun episode, and we get to see kind of retro Voyager again with Janeway in the Bun of Steel, and I feel like we get those missing caretaker scenes in this episode. That's kind of cool, so there's a lot going for it. I'm glad we're going to keep it.
Me too.
Warhead.
A sentient alien missile takes over the Doctor's program and tries to carry out its mission of mass destruction. Now, Robert Picardo does a great job in this episode. It's fun to see him play a different character, but we never hear of this again. We don't hear of it beforehand.
It's very forgettable. The one thing that you might want to know out of this episode is that Harry's been commanding the night shift for the last few days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But we'll see him command the night shift again.
Right. And we saw it before, didn't we? Wasn't he doing that at night?
Yes, he was.
So this is nothing new here. Okay,
nothing new.
Chucked. And that leads to our last episode for Season 5, Equinox, Part 1.
Voyager finds another Federation starship, the USS Equinox, stranded in the Delta Quadrant, but they also find that the Equinox crew is harboring a dark secret. Now, this is a two-parter, so we kind of have to, because it's split in between two seasons.
Well, it's one of those things where if we keep Part 1... that increases the chances for Part 2.
Yeah.
And I think I think you do want to have this one. It's a Voyager experience thing, because for everybody who wanted to know what Voyager had been like under the darker and grittier circumstances, well, yes, this one's for you.
Yep, this gives you a glimpse of what Battlestar Voyager would have looked like.
That's right. So, and it's also, it is nice, even for those of us who don't care so much about that, it is interesting to see another crew out there really struggling compared to how Voyager has had it. Now, that could be for a number of reasons. They were in slightly different parts of space, they encountered different people, because obviously they hadn't met up until about this time. You could say it's a testament to how awesome Janeway is.
That's true. Yeah, there's a lot of things I love about this. I love the rift between Janeway and Chakotay. I love how it pushes Janeway to the edge. But the premise is something that I've always kind of been angry with, where it takes away the specialness that Voyager is. Because this is trying to say that, you know, like Equinox was thrown in the Delta Quadrant before Voyager. And that means that, oh, Voyager's is copying the Equinox and we just didn't know it. And on top of that, it's a first contact era ship that was thrown in before Voyager. That doesn't make sense from an out-of-world experience and in-world experience. That always has bugged me. But that's not enough to say, oh, it's inessential or whatever the word is.
Yeah, those are really good gripes, but yes, that doesn't affect how essential
it
is.
Just
so.
Gripes, yeah.
But they're very good, and they're very, at least on my end, very well received. I have problems with Equinox as well, but that aside, I think you still should watch it. All right, so tallying it up, not counting our optional of Nothing Human, we kept 17 out of 25 episodes, and that leads to 68% of the season as a whole. Now, total, we have kept 72 episodes out of 120, not including the optionals, which makes 60% of the series kept so far.
All right. Now, for those of you counting at home, we're counting Dark Frontier as one episode.
Because it aired initially as a one solid block, not as two. So that's how we are justifying that. And 60%, that's a pretty high number. So, you know what? Voyager is not doing too bad. All right. Well, season 5 Essential Trek is not the only thing that we've been talking about on the network this week. Here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It would be a lot of fun to be able to MST3K an episode like Arena, which, who doesn't love poking fun at a rock-throwing Gorn? I mean, come on, you know?
Can you find a rudimentary lathe?
Exactly. I wrote that on the Babel conference today because Guy Fliegman from Galaxy Quest is the greatest character ever.
Earl Grey.
This 547-meter-long, 32-deck, 502-crew member.
That's awesome.
The Orb.
He requests, you know, a Bajoran officer to serve with him on purpose, you know. He understands. You make this their own. We can't.
I'm glad he did it on purpose. I could see him like accidentally requesting a Bajoran officer. Oh man, I checked the wrong box on the form. Damn.
To the journey! Benjamin and Kira. They would never touch like that.
No, that just would be really unnatural and weird for them. But for Janeway and Chakotay, it's very natural.
It's very comfortable. It's like slipping into a warm bath and hopefully Q's not in it. Commentary, Trek Stars.
I just finished a book on Audible that was recommended to me by some other people here on the network. Yeah. It's called Weapon of a Jedi.
They steered you right, Mike.
Nope.
The 602 Club.
And it's literally like the first page after the introduction, and it says, hey, here's the three factions, the New Republic. They don't want to commit to a full-scale war with the First Order, so they allow and back Princess Leia to create the Resistance. And I'm like, oh, okay, that makes total sense. Like, it took me 1 minute to read.
Women at Warp.
She's the communications officer first. She can be Spock's girlfriend second.
So how do you think people would respond if you said, describe who Carol Marcus is after seeing this movie?
She looks nice in her bra.
Meta Trex.
I looked it up, and ornare is the Latin word for to adorn.
That's fascinating.
So I looked up brekka, and it turns out the same spelling, B-R-E-K-K-A, is Old Norse for slope or hillside.
And that, listeners, is something you will only get right here on Metatrex.
Better living through etymology.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on any kind of platform you could possibly want to get all of your podcasts. And we have so much freaking Trek content coming to you every single week. We're now even doing a rewatch where we have new episodes coming to you, doing quick little bite-sized reviews every single day for the whole year in celebration of Trek's 50th anniversary. It's called From There to Here. And none of our shows, of course, are possible without the help of everybody on Patreon. This is super important to us because we are a listener-supported network. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Check it out. Consider becoming a monthly subscriber. On TTJ, we want to thank Aaron Harvey, Bruce Lish, Kenneth Tripp, and Jamie Deuce. They are our associate producers, and they especially rock because they support us in particular, but also the network as a whole. So thanks, guys. We need to wrap this one up. We've been talking for a long time. So what have we got coming up next week, Tristan?
Next week, I'm excited about because we're doing an episode rewrite. I always think those are fun, and I love to hear what you come up with and what the fans think of what we both come up with. And that is an episode we were just talking about, Infinite Regress, episode 7 from season 5. It's the episode where Seven develops multiple personalities of the people that she assimilated. And, you know, as we've said before, we don't rewrite great episodes. We don't rewrite horrible episodes most of the time. But we like to go towards the middle ground with the meh episodes where they had a great premise but not so great execution. We definitely right. think that's the case with Infinite Regress. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out.
That's right. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!